welcome to this episode of the Pump Court Family Law Podcast, where today we're going to be speaking about child maintenance in those big money cases. Now, today I'm delighted to welcome back Edward Boydell, who, as promised, is going to speak to us about his involvement in CMX and EJX, the French marriage contract case, which touched on this point. And I'm also joined by Helen Brander, who's going to tell us a bit more about the background to these cases. So, Ed, Helen, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, both of you. So, Helen, I wonder if I can just start with you. And if you could, we're obviously talking about child maintenance. We're going to focus on those top-up cases because there's been a lot of development recently with the case of James and Seymour, which followed on from CMX and EJX, which we're going to discuss. But before we get to that, can you just give us a bit more background about how the court has approached top-up cases?
Well, yes, for most cases, people will be looking directly to the child maintenance service as it now is to do a calculation and to sort out the child support payments between the parties. That's up to a limit now of £156,000 per year. Under the old scheme, so this is what's known as the 2008 regime, there was an earlier regime where the calculations were slightly different and they were based on net income. And under that scheme, where the net income was greater than the amount that was involved in between the parties, so the paying party earned more than that, then there was little guidance. Courts would become involved at that point, and they would then make decisions in accordance with the Section 25 factors, if it was a Matrimonial Causes Act case, or otherwise the factors in Schedule 1 of the Children Act, if that's what was applying at the time. However, as of 2003, in his decision in GW and RW, Mr. Justice Mostyn, who then I think was sitting as a Deputy High Court Judge, so he wasn't Mr. Justice Mostyn then, he was Nicholas Mostyn QC sitting as a Deputy High Court Judge, made a decision provided that where a court has jurisdiction to make the child maintenance order, so after the cutoff point, or otherwise outside of the various exceptions in the Child Support Act, Section 8, then the appropriate starting point is the amount arrived at by application of the rules, the child support rules in the Child Support Act 1991. He expanded on that in Reed TW and TM minors 2015, a High Court decision reported at 2 FLR 1386, where the same principle was held to apply to the 2008 regime. But prior to that, we had the decision of Mr. Justice Holman in Dixon and Rennie in 2014, where he made clear that actually the court doesn't have any jurisdiction until there has been a maximum calculation made by the Secretary of State, if you're looking at a top-up case in particular. So the court can't make any findings for the purpose of the top-up application, top-up jurisdiction, unless there's been that application.
When you've got one of those cases, that's the first thing to go and make sure that your client has actually gone off and got the calculation, so yes, that the court's jurisdiction is invoked.
Exactly. So they can present that to the court. Of course, under the child maintenance regime, the child maintenance service, you don't actually have to have the payments going through the child maintenance service. It can be done by agreement, but there needs to be that calculation. And most parties would use the government calculator to calculate that. And then we got to the decision in CB and KB, which is where the controversy began. And that, again, was a decision of Mr. Justice Mostyn in 2019, in which he suggested, but really people obviously follow his decisions because he's very clear, precise in what he's saying. But he he suggested that where the gross annual income of the paying parent or the non-resident parent doesn't exceed £650,000, the starting point is the formula under the Child Maintenance Service. So that, again, that would then give a figure which people could be certain of was likely to be paid. And that, of course, allows them for people to negotiate properly rather than relying on a court's jurisdiction.
And so, Helen, when you're saying the figure under the Child Maintenance Service, I assume you're meaning basically the an extension of the calculation just with the higher numbers.
There's so an extension of the formula. And of course, the formula is set out quite clearly, if you can't find it anywhere else, very clearly in At a Glance and AAG Cloud. You can do a calculation there straight off, but in At a Glance, the formulae are written down and you can calculate it yourself and stick that in your position statement and say, this is what it should be.
Yeah.
That was the straightforward position from 2019.
Yeah.
But certain other judges took issue with that decision.
And so now that's probably a convenient time to move to Ed, because CMX and EJX was one of those cases in which the court took issue with the decision of CB and KB. Edward, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So in CMX and EJX, Mrs. Justice Moore had to determine the applicability of a French marriage contract signed by the parties, right, obviously, shortly before they married, over 26 years ago. And it was a very high money case with between perhaps 24 to 26 million pounds in it. And of course, in terms of child maintenance, I was appearing for the wife. And when I wrote my note for Mr. Justice Moore, was I hoped that he would not uphold the French marriage contract. And so it's unknown then whether it's going to be a sharing case, in which case the wife might have expected to receive 12.5 million or so, or it's going to turn into a needs case, which in fact it turned into a needs case because he upheld the French marriage contract. When it came to the child maintenance element, therefore, these parties had one minor child. They had three children, but the elder two were already completed tertiary education. The youngest, still doing A-levels, qualifies for child maintenance at least for another year and quite possibly through tertiary education. The husband earned around $3 million per year, so vastly in excess of the $650,000. And when we were determining what to ask for, we decided to rely on CB and KB just to ask for the top up between the $156,000 notional point where the CMS stops assessing and the £650,000, which Mostyn had identified as being the upper point, beyond which you're into the world of complete discretion. The calculation for one 17-year-old child turned out to be a total award of just under £64,000. So really a fantastic sum for child maintenance, particularly in that case, because, of course, by the time the judge gets to deal with top up, he knows he's already awarded her about £9.5 million in other parts of the award to buy houses and to maintain her. And he can see, in fact, that within her budgets, although she had assessed the child budget at $47,900 or so, that included school fees and other expenses, which the husband was also going to pay. So, in fact, following CB and KB meant that my client was going to receive nearly £64,000 against a budget stripped out of about £22,000, and in circumstances where the fact that she had one child meant that it was a disproportionately large sum compared to CB and KB, in which there were four children. And so he, Mr. Justice Moore, decided that he was not going to follow CB and KB, however attractive it was as an easy way forward. He decided it wasn't fair that he, of course, had to apply Section 25. And so he took the view that the overall correct sum was £25,000. That includes the nominal £15,800 or so, which would be the CMS upper rate calculation on the £156,000. So that was what, in a sense, Mostyn, as Justice Mostyn, then looks at and obviously then reacts to when he deals with James and Seymour.
And so I suppose in your case, Ed, you were only looking at child maintenance for a very short period anyway, because your child was 17, wasn't he or she?
Yes, he was 17. Yeah. So case was heard in October, and yeah, he was just beginning his A-level year. I think my client would have hoped that it might have lasted through to tertiary education, but it's a much more difficult argument when you've got 9.4 million. So I think it became very clear that it was going to be literally until the end of the summer term, until, in fact, probably about today. My guess is that that child will be leaving school around now.
And what was the court, in your case's particular gripe with the formula that Mostyn had created? What was the perceived unfairness?
Well, the perceived unfairness was that it was such a blanket approach that it didn't really work out to any clever extent whether you were dealing with one child or four children. And therefore, as a pure calculation of 9.8% of income, it was disproportionately generous if there was any child. And Mr. Justice Moore works out in his judgment that if it had been a case like CB and KB with four children, then there would only have been £12,600 per year per child. Whereas in my case, it would have been £63,800 per child. So since you couldn't possibly argue that the expense of one child is over four times that of having four children, it was clearly failing as a laudable approach on a simplicity basis. It didn't really pass any fairness test once you unpicked it.
And so, Helen, we know that Mr. Justice Mostyn actually considered the criticisms made in CMX and EJX. And how did he respond in James and Seymour?
Well, he made the point that Ed has just made and reconsidered his own position and said, yes, I recognise actually that the cost of one child is not likely to be three or four times the cost of multiple children. In fact, I think he referred to 80% more or something like that in relation to the child in James and Seymour. And he prepared another formula which dealt with bringing the proposed child maintenance figures down much closer to those which would be realistic, those that have been ordered in other cases where there's been the discretion exercised, and that are much more realistic in relation to what children actually need. And he also took into account the previous decisions prior to the James and Seymour decision in Collado Fuchs and in Re-Z number four Schedule One award from 2022 and then 2023, in which it was made clear in both of those that when you're looking at the CB and KB guidelines, that's only relevant where you're looking at child maintenance being heard alongside a significant spousal maintenance claim or significant spousal financial remedy claim, but it's not relevant where the child maintenance claim is the centerpiece of the proceedings, when you would then be back in the world of the Section 25 discretion and looking at HECSAs or household expenditure child support awards, which was what was talked about in Collado Fuchs. So that would look at an award not only to meet the direct costs of the child, but also the costs in the parent with care's household that the parent with care can't meet without that extra support from the paying parent, the non-resident parent. So Mostyn took all that into account in James and Seymour, and he, as well as referring to his HECSA, he also then talked about an AFM. He prepared an adjusted formula methodology, which is the formula he set out. And he said that that should be used as a starting point. And again, a further, it's not really an acronym, is it? A series of initials, a CSSP, the child support starting point. In certain cases, it's a loose starting point, he said, which a decision maker can summarily choose to accept or reject without fear of appellate review. Well, one hopes that's right.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. How adhesive do you think these starting points are going to be?
I think people are going to stick to them like glue. He set out a really clear table in the last page of the James and Seymour judgment. There's an easy, ready reckoner. He also provides in that same judgment that the table sets out values for steps of £20,000 between the 156 and the 650,000 figures. 650,000 still seems quite arbitrary, and certainly we've moved on inflation-wise significantly from 2019 in CB and KB. But 650,000 is our sticking point now. And he also says that you can guess what the figure should be between those sums. There's an acceptable margin of error there for that to be presented to the court and say this is a reasonable amount. So the table is really clear. There is a solicitor at Clinton's who has prepared, and which is on the Financial Remedies Journal website, a spreadsheet in which you can simply put in your figures and it does the calculation for you. So there's two pages to that spreadsheet. It's by a man called Dom Christophers, really easy to find on the Financial Remedies Journal website. You put on the first page are the input information, and on the second page of that spreadsheet is the calculation. So you can see exactly how it's working and what the provisions are and how it's set out in the James and Seymour decision. I don't propose to go through the formula because it is very dry.
Yeah.
But it is all set out, and it's set out really clearly in the James and Seymour decision and also on that spreadsheet. Also, at a glance cloud, you can do that calculation as well if you're a subscriber to that.
One of the things I noticed from the table is that when there is equal shared care, there is still provision for maintenance. Yes. Now, how does that compare with the Child Support Act provision, i.e. non-top-up cases?
In non-top-up cases, where people do the calculation online, the last of the criteria of the number of nights is equal shared care, which is defined as the paying parent having 175 to 182 nights a year. 182 and a half nights would be exactly equal in a 365-day year, 183 nights in a leap year. But there is still an amount to pay. So at the top end of the of the, so the £156,000 a year calculation for one child, with no other children being paid for or having them in their own house, the paying parent would still have to pay £605 a month broadly, in respect of that one child. But there, and this is also reflected then in the table at in James and Seymour, where you can see that where there is what's called equal shared care, 156,000 is worked out at £7,300 per per year, and then at 650,000, the leap is much smaller than it would have been under CB and KB. You're looking at £13,200 a year to pay. But the question is how you define that equal shared care, because certainly parties who consider that they have exactly equal an exactly equal division of time often think, well, there's nothing to pay because it just simply there is no obligation there. We've both got an equal shared care, and so we've both got the same expenses. You may think that in that case, we've got one parent who earns more than the other, and they each have a claim against the other. And so one parent might be able to set off the amount they would be paying the other parent to then come to a figure which that the other parent should be paying. So, for example, one should be paying 600 a month, the other should be paying 400 a month. You set them off against each other, and the paying parent then pays £200 a month. That would be a simple way of doing it. However, when we're looking at disputes in relation to child maintenance, and if you're particularly looking at disputes under the Child Support Act, the jurisdiction for determining those disputes is in the first tier tribunal. And they frequently have to work out who the paying parent is, who is the parent with care, and who is a non-resident parent. And in doing that, they then look at the regulations, 2012 regulations, and they also look at a set of criteria as to determine that, to find somebody who is actually going to be responsible for paying child maintenance. Regulation 50 of the 2012 regulations says that where you have equal shared care, exactly equal shared care, then that's a special case, and the person who is to be defined as the non-resident parent is the person who is the person who provides day-to-day care to a lesser extent than the applicant. Well, the and the way that that is defined under various cases that have been decided in the first tier tribunal is where you're looking at the count of nights, certainly, but also a much broader approach. And so a non-resident parent seeking to achieve the status of a parent with care needs to also show that, for example, their address is registered with the doctor, the dentist, or is the first point of contact for school or nursery, or they pay for school meals, uniforms and clothes, or they pay for and arrange any childcare, or perhaps it's been decided previously, the parent with care is the person who more commonly signs the homework book, or funds after school clubs, or attends them. If there's been an agreement about sharing care emerging from mediation or court, and whether those arrangements are being adhered to, they'll be taken into account as well. It's not just simply totting up the number of nights. But if you have a situation where both parents are doing all of those things exactly the same, which is really unlikely, but if you do have that situation, then there is no non-resident parent. And there's no jurisdiction then to make a child maintenance award under the child maintenance system. That might also apply to the James and Seymour position. And in that case, my view is that jurisdiction would be transferred to the court, and you'd be looking potentially at a HECSA, a household expenditure child support award, because there will be extra expenses in one parent's household that can't be met by child maintenance normally.
Very interesting. Well, I think we'll have to leave it there, but Helen, Ed, thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.